Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Shaar Etzion, Monday night, 9 o'clock. Post-Pesach class, dedicated tonight the Refuah Shelema of Salcha Bat Shoshana, that's Celia Izan Gindi. We ask everyone to pray for a speedy and complete recovery. That's Salcha Bat Shoshana. I wanted to give you the number of the tape store. CD Keter Tapes is on Avenue M. It's 406 Avenue M in Brooklyn, diagonally across the street from Moishe's Discount Supermarket. Most people find Moishe's, but they don't know the tape store, you know. 645-5841. 645-5841. Anybody out of town who needs tapes, CDs, or other paraphernalia. He also sells Judaica. Let's support him so he can keep servicing the community. We're in the days of the Omer. Usually when I give a class, I say it before I come, so I don't fall into the trap of saying it by mistake. But should I say tonight's number, I have no intention of being Yotzeh. Now I'm covered. The Omer is a very unusual thing. The Omer is really a measure. It's like saying a quart or a pound. And we make such a big deal, you know, the Omer. So what? A pound, a quart, a gallon. What's so special? Well, the Omer was actually one of the once-a-year offerings in the Beit HaMikdash. And it consisted of barley. How much barley? An Omer. An Omer of barley was brought in the Beit HaMikdash. And it permitted people to eat Hadash. So now your pizza store does not need a sign that says Kemach Yashan anymore, because we already brought the Omer. And 7 weeks later, on Shavuot, there was another offering brought called Shteh HaLechem, which was two loaves, and that had to do with wheat, not barley, etc. And now we were able to eat everything that was forbidden from the Rosh Hashanah season until Pesach. That's all the stuff, Yashan, Chadash, and all that you read. This cake is Yashan, this bread is Yashan, you eat Yashan, all that stuff. I can't get into that now, but that's basically what it was. But in the Torah it says, Usvartem Lachem, you have to count. And when do you count from? From the day you brought the Omer. So we start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, pop, 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 pop. To the Omer. From the day we brought the Omer, which was always the second day of Pesach. So now we know why we count, because the Torah told us to count. And why do we call it the Omer? Because we count from the day of the Omer. But what most people notice about the Omer, no weddings, no music, no haircuts. A lot of the nice, good-looking guys you're going out with suddenly look grubby. They don't shave. Maybe I don't like him so much. That's, you know, imagine if this is the way he looks now when he's single. What's he going to look like 2 months after he's married? You know, like shaving, haircuts, music. The traditional signs of mourning that there are many different customs as to when you do it exactly. Is it from Rosh Chodesh on? Is it from the first, from the Omer on? Is it, you know, which exact days? And most people keep approximately 5 weeks of mourning customs having to do with haircuts and shaving and music and weddings. Why is that? I mean, counting this offering of, let's call it a quart of barley, doesn't sound too depressing to me that hundreds, if not over 1,000 years after whatever it is caused it, we should have to walk around not being happy. So the Gemara brings the answer in Yevamot Daf Samech Bet, the very famous three lines of Gemara, which says, Shenem Asar Elev Zugim Talmidim Ayula Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs, quick math, 24,000 students. And it tells you where they were, Mikavat Latifras, they lived from here to there. V'chulam metu b'perek echad. And they all died in one particular time period. Why is it they died? Gemara gets right to the core. This is not a long, complicated discussion. This is quick. Because they didn't conduct, they didn't treat each other with respect. A lack of respect between the students of Rabbi Akiva. V'haya olam shamim, says the Gemara, and the world became desolate. What does Rashi say desolate means? Shenishtakeha Torah. The Torah was forgotten. Now you have to realize, like we learn in Pirkei Avot at this time of year, Moshe kibel Torah Misinai, Sra Yoshua, Yoshua Lizkeni, there's a masoret, there's a tradition, how we pass down Torah. Torah was given to Moshe on Jabal Musa, on Har Sinai, in the Sinai Peninsula, and he passed on the traditions to Yehoshua, who became the leader. Yehoshua gave it to people called the Zekenim, the elders. The elders passed it on. And it was a tradition passed on teacher to student through the generations, with a leader in the generations. That's why it says like, Hillel and Shammai kibbalu mehem. At the time of Hillel and Shammai, they were the two leaders of the generation. So, if the 24,000, if Rabbi Akiva was the leader of his generation, and the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva all died, now there's no Torah. Because you can't just look in the book and know what it means. You need the tradition. It's gotta be explained. You need the Torah Shebaal Peh. And since these 24,000 died, it was a horrible day. The world was desolate because the world was created for Torah, and there's not, there's no Torah, there's no teachers. Atshiva Rabbi Akiva Rabotein Sheva Darom B'Shina Alehim. So what did he do? Rabbi Akiva was no youngster at the time, who had spent all those years building up this mass of Torah, this next generation of teachers, and they all die in a short 33-day period. All. I figured out, how many funerals did we figure out? If you skip Shabbat, it's about 900 funerals a day. Imagine 900 funerals a day, but not just obituaries of this one and that one. We're talking about Talmidei Chachamim who had the distinction of being students of Rabbi Akiva. Today, if you say you know a Talmid Chacham, they like you and respect you. But imagine if you were his student. What level of student? 24,000 all died. So what did he do? Give up the ship? Retire? Go on Social Security? Quit? No! Rabbi Akiva says, I'm going to start over. There's no Torah. We need a link to the next generation. So he finds, Fien al-Adu, five great Rabbanim. Rabbi Meir, most of you heard of Rabbi Meir. His famous Baal Piluta, the one he was always arguing with, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yoseh, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, v'hem he'emidu Torah oto sha'a. They reestablished the Torah. They learned the Torah from Rabbi Akiva, and now they were capable to pass on to the next generation. That's the history of Amasoret. Without that little group, that little kolel of Rabbi Akiva, there'd be no Torah today. Chas v'shalom. Tana continues the Gemara, and is the last few words of the Gemara. Kulam metu mipesach ve'ad atzeret. And they all died in the time period between the Chag of Pesach, last week, and the Chag of Shavuot, approximately 5.5 weeks from now. They died in that time period. And that whole story is the end of the Gemara. So now we have the basis for the mourning. We're mourning the loss of 24,000 greats. And when you read about a funeral of Rabbi Auerbach, where 500,000 people show up, And he lived in our generation. He was great. He lived in our generation. But he would be in awe of any of the 24,000. And you can imagine what it was to have 900 funerals of people of that stature in a day, every day, for 5 weeks. And we just take on a few customs of semi-mourning, like we don't play music and we don't have a party for a wedding and we don't get married and we don't take a haircut. Some people don't shave, etc. We don't say Shechiyanu on a new beged, a new garment. To understand the tragedy, you have to understand that these were not regular, what we call rabbis. They were giants. There's nobody you could name. And I mean, you can't, if they were at the time of Rabbi Akiva, they were Tannaim, I don't know if you can compare even a Rashi or a Rambam to them. So you got to get in your head what we're talking about before I pose the next question. And if you think of the five who replaced them, I mean, Rabbi Meir alone, well known till today, Rabbi Yudada, that's the level of Tanna we're talking about. Then what is this Lo Nahagu Kavod Ze LaZeh? They didn't respect one another. It just doesn't jive. And not only that, the penalty is death. Okay, I didn't respect you. We say in Brooklyn, so hit me. It's not death. It's death. It's certain things. It's death. Somebody violates Shabbat on purpose. Come Edim. Come witnesses in the time of the Mikdash when there was a Sanhedrin. They warn him, do you know you're violating Shabbat and you could suffer from Sikila? And he says, yes, I know. I'm going to do it anyhow. And they bring him to court and they try and save him. But in the end, they finally convict him. Death. I didn't treat you with the ultimate of respect. Is that the same thing? And yet 24,000 died. And if these people died, as she revealed to us, there's no more Torah. Chas v'shalom. There's no more Torah. But please, let's not get carried away, you would say. First of all, let me clarify before I forget. If we went to their yeshiva, and we videotaped every motion and every word, we would not detect any lack of respect. Only God with his microscopic judgment would notice at their level a certain amount of maybe a word here or a lifted eyebrow there that we wouldn't even notice would be the lack of respect. Which even strengthens the question. But then again, we could always come up with, well, God judges the righteous with more strictness. But I want to take a different course today because we got to end up with something we can use because these days of Sefira are days of self-improvement and days of growth so that we can re-accept the Torah and Shavuot. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wrote that people are driven by two forces, Hergel and Teva. Hergel is habit. If I do something enough times, it becomes a second nature. I do it without thinking. Some people twirl their hair all the time. Everybody has funny little habits that they have that they don't realize they're doing. But it's a habit. Now, of course, there's bad habits like smoking. People who smoke don't even know they're smoking half the time they're smoking. They just light it up and go, you know, because I'm nervous. And then when they're not nervous, they think they're nervous, so they take out a cigarette. It's a habit. The other thing is teva. Teva is your natural inclinations. And everybody in this room was given a different set of personality traits. Some of you are very calm. Some of you are very nervous. Some of you are very generous. Some of you are very stingy. I can't help it. Everybody's different. Some of you are very pleasant, some of you are very aggravating. Nobody comes here that's aggravating. We leave them in the hall. But the rest of you are so nice. But you're different from each other. And what happens is I can create habits. I can work on myself and develop a habit. But that habit is constantly being banged against and pushed and battled by my nature. Let's say I'm a lazy guy, I don't like to learn. Like sitting with a book in front of me is difficult. Well, I might be brought up in a religious home where they send me to yeshiva, and by going to school and wanting to be a goody-goody, I start to do it on a regular basis because that's what they expect me to do in class. And I start doing it and doing and doing, and I develop the habit of a pretty good learner. I could sit and learn most of the time, and I become what's known in the yeshiva world as a matmid. Someone who's constantly learning. I'm using me as an example because I'm not that person. But somebody who constantly has the book open in front of them, and they study and they remember and they work all their waking hours, matmid. But that same matmid might have a teva, might have a natural inclination towards one of the three things on which the world stands. You know, what's in season now? They say, Ashlashad Rabim Alam. I mean, there are three things the world stands on. Money, money, and money. And he might have an inclination deep in his heart for money. But why is he in matmid and yeshiva if he likes money? Well, he never ran up against money. He grew up in the yeshiva world. He sat down in the yeshiva. He has no need. His father-in-law supports him or something. I don't know. He doesn't have money. Is not in his head. But what happens? He gets a little older. He has a few children. He has to go out and work. And he makes a couple of deals. And he gets the taste. Dum, da, dum, dum. And suddenly his natural tendencies start to fight his habit. His habit is to sit and learn, and his tendency was a latent, sounds very psychological, right? Subconscious love of money. And now that he comes into contact with his true love, slowly but surely there is potential, chas v'shalom, that he will stop learning altogether. So Rabbi Salanta tells us, Zeches Adik Livracha, that every human being has these two forces driving them. And the real tendencies are hidden until the situation arises where it may raise its ugly head. Like this young man we just spoke about. It takes the slightest to get it going. Now, there's a great story in Tanakh that will show you what I mean. In fact, I think it would be this week's Haftarah, if it were not that this week is Rosh Chodesh. Although I didn't check today, so I don't want to quote myself and misquote. 12 years from today, somebody hear the tape and say, I misquoted the Haftarah. But I know that there's a chapter in Melachim Bet, like to look it up, it's Perek Zayin, the 7th chapter, and it talks about Va'arba'a Anashim Hayu Mitzora'im Petach HaShar. There were 4 people who had the spiritual disease that manifests itself by some kind of skin discoloration called Tzara'at. They were Mitzora. They commonly used to translate it as leprosy, but since it's not contagious and it's not physical and it's really spiritual, now the better books translate it as Tzara'at. They just spell it out phonetically. So this Sarat, there were 4 people. Rashi tells us it was Elisha's servant or assistant or misharet, butler, Gehazi, who was a pretty despicable character, and his 3 sons. And they're sitting outside the gates of the city because one of the laws of Mitzorah is they're not allowed in the city. So they're outside the city and they say, what are we doing here? We're sitting here, the city is under siege by the armies of Aram, somewhere in the area of Iran, where Abraham Avinu was born, Iran, Iraq. Those armies came, laid siege to the city, and now all the people inside the city are starving, people are dying, I don't like to say it because everybody twinges, but they were actually gentle women who ate their children because they were so hungry. And these four Mitzorayim are sitting at the gates of the city, and they say, why are we sitting here? Why don't we just go to the enemy camp? They have food. We'll beg for food. One or two things will happen. Either they'll kill us, or they'll feed us. If they kill us, well, we're going to die anyhow, sitting here starving. And if they feed us, well, we've solved the problem. So they head out for the camp of Aram. They get to the camp of Aram. And Hashem made a miracle. Hashem made a miracle that the camp of Aram heard many troops and trumpets and warriors on horses coming in their direction. They thought that the Jews had paid mercenaries from another country to come save them. And they ran away. So these four people come upon this huge military camp, loaded with gold, jewels, clothing, silver, and food. And there's nobody there but the horses. So they go in, they ransack one whole tent, take all the money and bury it. They eat to their heart's delight. And you would think the next move would be, let's go back and tell everybody. There's people starving in the town. Our friends, our neighbors, our cousins. What do? They say, let's go back to the camp, find another tent full of stuff. So they bury the stuff they found, and they go back to the camp, and they find another tent, unload all the wealth that's there, and they start going from tent to tent. They go back three times to the camp, before they decide, why don't we go and tell people there's food over here? That these guys ran away. And there's no reason to be in a siege when there's no siege. And they do, and the king was suspicious, and he sent out scouts to make sure that the people did run away. Maybe it was a trap. Maybe they wanted us to come out of the city, because, you know, they're in a walled city. And bottom line, they come out and they find out that the people did run away, and all the people eat. But let's look at these four lowlifes who were sitting outside the camp starving, knowing that everybody in the city is starving. Men, women, and infants are starving. And they find out there's food available to feed everybody. And what do? Give me the money, honey. And I'll worry about everything else later. And they go back three times. Three times. Before they tell the people. Pretty cold and cruel. But you know what it is? They had a rotten midah of greed. And when they confronted a situation where the ugly greed could raise its head, it overcame everything else. That's the power of a bad character trait. Or better known in Lashon HaKodesh, Midah Raha. A bad Midah. The Ramchal, the author of Mesilat Yesharim, says that Ga'ava, Ktzit or haughtiness, Ka'as, short temper or anger, kin'ah, jealousy or envy, v'hata'ava, desire, hen kol ele midot ra'ot. That's a good list of the four worst midot you could possibly have. Asher ra'atam nikeret umfursemet. The evil of those traits is known and recognized throughout the world. Ein sarich la'rayot, says, I don't have to prove it to you. Anybody vote positively on jealousy? Anybody? I think it's a good one. It's a bad midah, good midah. We still vote bad, so you agree with him. Very smart man, you shouldn't disagree with him. He knows what he's talking about. Kaas, you like the guy with the short temper in your office, always cursing behind the doors, and you're walking, you're afraid to walk in and tell him something, he might blow it. Nobody, okay. So we see, these are bad midot. he says that from them stem other bad midot. But he says something amazing about these midot. They don't make sense. Kulan chutz mishurat ha-sechel v'achokma. And worst of all, bing, 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 bing. Pay attention. Everybody awake? Everybody awake? These bad midot, kol achat kedai la'atzma, any one of them, you don't need all four, kedai la'avi et ha'adam el averot hamudot, will lead a person to commit horrible sins. There's a famous Sefer of Musar called Sha'arei Kedusha by Rav Chaim Vital, Zecher Kadosh Levracha, and in it he sort of poses a question. You come to classes week in, week out. I don't know why you come back for more punishment every week, but you do. And you listen to this guy tell you, midot, midot, it's horrible, it's bad, fix your midot, look in the mirror, straighten yourself out, fix your character, fix your character. So basically you would think, well, that's a real sin. So how come in the Torah it doesn't say, don't lose your temper? It says don't wear shatnez. It says don't kill, don't steal, don't lie. But it doesn't say outright, oh, we have lessons, we have places. Oh, Moshe lost his temper and he forgot the Torah, he forgot the Deen. Oh, we see temper is bad. Right? We have stories that we can deduce that the Torah takes a negative view of anger. Makes you dumb. You lose your mind. Right? Right. But why doesn't it say on all these midot, don't? And if you check the list of the 613 mitzvot, which you may not have time for, so I'll tell you, you're not going to find them. The bad character traits are not on the list of averot. Say Sha'arei Kedusha Rav Chaim Vital, amazing statement. Repeat it. In English, please. Thank you. The matter of bad character traits is more difficult or more serious or worse than sins themselves by a lot. It's not even a close call. This ain't Gore and Bush, folks. This is an outfit. This is like a Super Bowl, 35-0. It's over in the first quarter. Midot ra'ot are worse than the sins themselves by a lot. How can you make such a statement? He says, well, let's look at what the rabbis say. And we can't understand some of these chazals, as they're called. Kol ha-ko'es, anyone who loses their temper, anyone loses their temper, ki'ilo oved avodah zarah mamash, it's as if you're worshipping idols. Hello? Worshipping idols is one of the big three. It's one of the cardinal sins. It's one of those things I have to give up my life if threatened and not commit. And so, my wife aggravated me. I lost my temper. That's Avodah Zarah. But that's what Chazal say. Someone who is conceited. Someone who acts in a haughty manner. Kofer ba'ikar. Is a total heretic. Denying all of the Torah. God's existence, everything. Huh? I'm just feeling good. You know, I bought this fancy car. I bought this expensive suit. I walked down the street feeling good about myself. I saw the girls dropping as I walked by. Wow. Conceit.
Who did I kill? Kofer Maika. I believe in the Torah. I keep Shabbat. I eat kasher. What do these chazals mean? Eliyahu Navi said, I don't appear to anyone who's a kaptan. Kaptan is somebody who's just a little too fussy in particular about how things go. Just gets upset at every little thing that doesn't go right. And if somebody's makpi, very particular and exact and precise, and doesn't let things slide, Eliyahu Navi will not appear to him. The answer to all of these is that the midot are the roots of mitzvah performance. A person should know that if I have good midot, good character, I will almost automatically, like a robot, perform mitzvot. And if, chas v'shalom, a person has bad character traits, almost like a robot, almost like a computer program that operates from step A to B to C to D to E, and it always goes that way, that person with poor character will do even the worst of sins. That's the principle of Sha'arei Kedusha. They're not listed amongst the mitzvot, the averot, the sins. It's not listed in the list of commandments because they are the root and the cause of mitzvah performance or violation. And that's why he says they're worse than any other. Why? How can it be worse? You know why? Because it will cause, one bad midah will cause hundreds, if not thousands, of averot, of sins. A root turns into a tree and a lot of apples grow. So if the root is rotten, the apples are rotten. And so a person has to understand what drives them. It's that teva that we talked about. It's that nature that God gave you. And I know the devil made me do it. He gave it to me. So why am I responsible? Because that's my job. My job on this earth is to develop from the imperfect person I was born, a perfect individual. From the person with weak character or flaws in my character to a person who overcomes that weakness and develops good character. In fact, Rashi in the Parasha Kedoshim, he says, you know, the Parasha opens, Daber El Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael. Now, if you open up the Torah, you're going to find Hashem says to Moshe, saying, speak to the people of Israel, speak to the sons of Israel, Daber B'nei Yisrael, Daber B'nei Yisrael, Daber B'nei Yisrael. You'll see it hundreds of times. But over here it says, Daber El Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael. Speak to the entire congregation of the people of Israel. Why all of a sudden this parasha of Kedoshim, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, do we have to, it's a few weeks actually, do we have to get together, Moshe has to congregate everybody to tell them those mitzvot? Does it have more mitzvot than every parasha? No, it has a lot. But not more. There are parashiyot that have more mitzvot. Are these what we would consider the loftiest? Well, it doesn't have the Ten Commandments. It doesn't have some other mitzvot you might list in the top ten. But what it does have is a lot of mitzvot that have to do with how people treat people. Like how to treat a poor person. Like, lo tisna et achicha bilvadecha. Don't hate your fellow man in your heart. Lo tikom, don't take revenge. Lo titor, don't hold a grudge. Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. Reprove your friend. You see something wrong? Help them. Don't sit back and say, wow, is he in trouble? Boy, when I get to heaven, I'm going to miss her. No, that's not the I help them. In fact, lo telech Rachil banecha. Don't be a gossip monger. Rachil is actually a peddler. So when the Torah wants to tell us not to talk lashon hara, it says, don't be a peddler. Don't go from house to house selling your wares. Did you hear what? Wow. Really? Can't be her. I don't believe it. I thought they were so happy. And then you go from house to house. What parasha is that in? Kedoshim. Lo telech rachil. Says Rav Segal, the late Rosh Yeshiva of Manchester, Kulam mitzvot shel ben adam lachaverot, the majority of mitzvot in the parasha of Kedoshim are between man and man. Ulfi shehem gufe Torah, since they are the foundations, the basis, the body of Torah. Hashem tells Moshe, bring everybody together. I want everybody to be aware of these mitzvot. We're rolling now. So now, I have a question. The students of Rabbi Akiva all died in the period between Pesach and Shavuot. They died of a horrible, I guess, lung disease, some kind of choking, some kind of tuberculosis or something like that. I don't know what it's called in English. But they weren't able to breathe. And it came because lo nahagu kavod ze laze, a minor flaw in the way they treated each other in respect, which we would not even notice. Okay, we got all that point. It's all important. But question. There are 12 months in the year. And the Gemara bothers to tell us, would it matter if it happened in December? Wouldn't it still be a tragedy? Would it really make a difference if it happened in July? And yet the Gemara goes out of its way at the very, very end and says, Tana, there's a Baraita that tells us when it happened. You know when it happened? Between Pesach and Shavuot. Whoopee. Could have been any time. You see, you have two questions on the floor now, just to review. One, forgot the first one already, I know, so I'll review it for you. Why is this cause for a punishment of death? Okay, it's not good, but it ain't so bad either. So why do they get death for this minor, seemingly minor infraction? Second, why does it happen, and why does the Gemara point out specifically that it happens in the time between Pesach and Shavuot? Well, if we want to understand why Hashem was so makpid, why he was so particular with the students of Rabbi Akiva, well, you see, these were the people destined to be the leaders of the next generation and pass on the Holy Torah to the next generation. And that Torah had to be as pure as the Torah they received from Rabbi Akiva. And because of this trait, this flaw, their Torah, I can't say it, but the books say, also had a flaw in it. Because you see, as we learn from Parashat Kedoshim, as Rashi explains to us, the reason why Hashem told Moshe to bring everybody together is because those v'ahavta le'reacha kamocha laws, love your neighbor as yourself, or as Rabbi Akiva himself said, ma'disane lach, or as Rabbi, really, Hillel HaZaken said it, Hillel HaZaken said, ma'disane lach le'chavracha atabid, what you don't like, don't do to your friend.
That gufe Torah, that's the body of the Torah. That's with the legs that the Torah stands on. And if you don't have that, you can't pass on the Torah. So how is Hashem going to point out to us how important that is to Him? Well, if I'm going to punish them, I'm going to punish them in the time period when people are preparing for Shavuot. When they're counting day by day. If you open up Sefer Chinuch, it says, why do we count? Why do we count every year? Well, they counted in the desert, and we also count in anticipation of re-accepting the Holy Torah on Shavuot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 4 weeks and 5 days, 4 weeks and 6 days, on and on to the big 49, everybody smiles. Tomorrow, on the 50th day, we get the Torah again. When is that? It's coming up now. So now we understand. If I'm going to make the point, what's the foundation of the Torah? If I'm going to make the point, what you have to do for yourself to be a keli, a receptacle that can hold the Torah, understand the Torah, and live the Torah, and pass the Torah on to your children and the next generation, you have to perfect your character. You can't even have minor flaws, like a lack of respect one for another. You have to take Parashat Kedoshim to heart, even though we're not reading it yet for another few weeks. You have to know all the Adam Lachaveros, all the man-to-man mitzvot. They were missing what it takes to accept the Torah. And so Hashem punished them. And He punished them in the time period for re-acceptance of the Torah. How does this apply to Sarah and Rivka and Moshe and Yosef and whoever else is in this room in Tavshin Samech Bet 5762? The lesson is clear. We have to learn from this that every person who considers them a person of the Torah, which we all are, we try our best to be good, to do what the Torah says. We have to work on our character, on our midot, because that's our teva, and that's the control switch deep down inside our subconscious. We have to know that these are the foundations and the roots of our behavior. And that as much as we train ourselves and practice good habits and develop good habits, if we don't uproot the bad traits, if we don't look in the mirror with the same microscope Hashem looks in the mirror, and we don't see in ourselves a short temper, a stinginess, a laziness, or whatever it is that we have a weakness in, and don't go to the core and learn the Musar, how to beat that and uproot that, then as soon as we see even a glint of it again, like that student who smelled money, we'll go on a slide like a person wearing wet sneakers on a glass mountain. You won't be able to stop. The lesson is Torah without midot is not Torah. Rav Segal says Torah bli midot ena klum. It's nothing. Harambam gives us the practical suggestion. How does a person conduct themselves in these particular traits that we know to be good in order to become good at them? What Being too stingy is no good. Giving away everything you've got is also bad. There's a middle ground. A little bit to the right, because generous is known to be better than stingy. But giving fairly and generously, without holding back, but not giving it all away. And you practice. And you give. Rambam even says, if a person has 100 $1 bills and a $100 bill, it's better to give out 100 times a dollar. Same amount, but your hand gets used to giving. And he says, after you give enough times, it won't be alem torach. And then yikav'u hade'ot b'nafsho. If you really, really work on it, and you really, really repeat it, and you catch yourself when you're about to slip, and you do the positive again, eventually, promises Harambam, yikav'u hade'ot b'nafsho. The trait will be established and set in your soul. That will become what we call second nature. It may not be the nature you were born with, but it will be the nature that will replace the bad midah you were born with. And so now when you come up against that temptation that used to drive you batty, you will ignore it. And you won't be subject to avera performance, to the averot, the sins that come from that particular trait. V'zonikret, and this, says Harambam, is called Derech Hashem. It's the way, the path of God. U'mivi'at tova u'bracha la'atzmo. It brings good and blessing to the person themselves. When you're functioning properly, when you reach perfection, you bring blessing to yourself. And you'll actually be happy. So you hear that song, that in this time of self-perfection, we're all able to understand the lesson tonight of the conflicting powers in us, how to overcome them, so that we too will be able to accept the Torah again very, very soon, and maybe even under the leadership of Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Mehrah.